I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A. And very excited to welcome to our studios a band who has been together for quite some time in various configurations. Some people have been in through the whole time, and then we have somebody here who's been... Well, you've been in the band a long time, Mark, right?
Yeah, I've been around for about 8 years
just
now.
Just not since the beginning. But I want to welcome members of the Big Woo. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Christine.
And we have Chris here on guitar. Or Mando, I mean Mandolin.
Mandolin today. We'll see how that goes.
And now we have Mark Joseph on guitar. And Terry Vandewalker, my saying that right, Terry? Also on guitar, although you also play drums in the band.
Yes,
right?
I do. Thanks for having us, Christine.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. This is really exciting. And you have your first album out in, it's been a while, right? It's, I don't even want to say when because I might be wrong.
97?
Really?
Long time.
It's not that far off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We've been playing the whole time, but we, when Mark joined in 2010... it really felt like we had a chance to really regroup, and Mark was really on board with playing Big Woo music and whatever that means, you know, that style of music, our kind of roots rock jam music. He loves it, and we love him, and so we were like, all right, well, we're playing a lot of shows, so let's get back in the studio and show people what the current version of the Big Woo sounds like, and it was really, really fun to do.
Well, why don't we, I'll have you get started with a song, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit and find out what you've been up to since you last were here in the studio, which was probably like before Mark was even in the band.
Before Mark was born.
Probably.
It was in the early 80s.
All right, what do you want to start with?
This one's called Young Pioneer. Generations got the cavalry sword from the War of 1812 and a grainy photograph from the Civil War. Sitting up on a shelf, dressed in a uniform, was a relative, a man named William Spain. He was just 17 and a veteran, riding on a westbound train. A survey crew had a little spot picked out for him and his little woman, driving him crazy, getting him alone. Always wanted for to go swimming, too young for to not know. No matter what the moon might say, as hard as it was, they never once thought it's all work and no play. They would wade in the water, gather dust above her head. Thank you. Built her house there, but the hard work and the whiskey there was cruel. Keeping his head up and the hammer down, moving on a stubborn mule. Bought her a fine dress, next thing you know, they're curling toes on a cold bed sheet. Deep pot, getting hot on the stove top, they're making that steam. They were waiting. Dress up on her head. Young pioneer came right through this way. Headed out west from Illinois. They would wade in the water. Gather her dress up on her head. Young pioneer came right through this way.
That is the Stripped Down Big Woo live from Studio A. And is that a tune from the new one?
New song.
Yeah.
That's the new one. First track off
opening
the new
one. Opening
cut. Nice. Well, so I'm just going to do a little Big Woo 101 for people that, you know, might not be familiar with you. I was speculating before the session that you might possibly be the biggest band ever to come out of Northfield, Minnesota.
Ew.
Can anybody dispute that?
I don't know. You guys,
listening
Mark,
audience,
what do you think?
I think that's, I mean.
So Chris and Terry are your original members of the band, right?
Yes.
So back in the early 90s, was it, that
yeah,
you came together?
Right.
You were at St. Olaf?
Yeah, we stumbled into the St. Olaf campus unsure of our futures.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of came together and realized that that was probably a good way to spend our time playing in a band together, rather than whatever itinerary the administration had for us. It was the right move, and that's where we started, and we all came up to the Twin Cities after graduating and tried to plug into the scene. And it took us a while, but things started moving, and yeah, that's kind of how the first chapter went.
Mm-hmm. Where did you fit into the Minneapolis scene at that time? Because I don't, you know of a lot of other bands like what you do, you know.
Well, I mean, at the beginning,
in that area at that time.
We were coming out of college as a college fun band, so we weren't doing a lot of originals at that point. So we were doing covers, and then, you know, with the untimely passing of Jerry Garcia in 1995, coinciding with us moving to Minneapolis, we sort of saw an opportunity to play primarily Dead covers, but also Allman Brothers and Van Morrison and things of that ilk. But we could do it with a new approach. So there were some bands at the time that were doing it, but they were kind of older and their sound was a little bit more, I don't know, tame, I guess. And so we decided to sort of maybe play that material, but with a little more oomph and a little bit more, you know, I don't know, you know, juice or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that latched on with people. It really resonated with people who liked the music and liked the scene, but we were doing it in a different way and a little bit different, a little fresher.
Mm-hmm.
So that got us our following. And then there was some pressure to not be a cover band though, too. So we started writing originals.
How does that work when you know, you've been doing cover bands and you're a cover band, you've been doing that, and somebody says, write some originals? How easy is that to start doing when you haven't been doing that?
Well,
how do you approach that?
I mean, we did a rehearsal every week is how we did it. And we sort of challenged ourselves, Chris primarily at the beginning, even Andy Miller, the bass player at that point, of bringing a song every week. So we would keep our regular routine of playing shows, but try to add a new tune. I mean, that was a lofty goal. We maybe didn't add one every week, but if you listen to the old Terminal tapes, you'll see that we kind of sprinkle in a Silk and Turn It Over, Midnight Rudy, sort of early on. even though it's intermingled with Dancing in the Streets and, I mean, kind of the hits that we were doing. But we had a great audience that respected that, I guess, that allowed us to do that, a real open-minded listening group, because that's what the Dead sort of were anyways. I mean, a group that was willing to kind of take chances with the music, so that's what we did. And then it sort of just organically moved from there, that the shows ended up having less covers in them and more originals, and slowly matriculating, you know, into then shows. I mean, it took a while, 4 or 5 years, but then shows that were primarily originals.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you threw a cover in, it was like a special occasion, because now we're playing a cover.
Mm-hmm.
So it was organic, but I mean, thankfully we had an audience that was willing to go on that journey with us, because without the audience, that particular audience, then we probably couldn't have done it. It would be a little bit more difficult. So
I remember writing songs for a group of people that really liked us and also liked that we were playing a certain kind of music, Grateful Dead based music. And I remember writing songs where I was really cautious of going too far out of outside of that. So a lot of the stuff that I wrote early on, there was really some borrowing and homaging to music that we were playing. And then just as much as I felt comfortable with pulling it out into other directions and seeing how it would go, you know, and seeing if people would like it. And sometimes they would, and sometimes we would change things. And but there was a lot. We really appreciated our crowd, and we really wanted to serve them in a way. And so a lot of our early music was, you know, curated, I guess, to them. And they liked it. So, and then as time went on, we started to break out and do other types of, started to really write music that was outside of that.
And you grew a very a fanatical fan base. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for, but very passionate fan base, like people very devoted to the band. Travel. We were talking about a friend of mine that first told me about your band, and she would, you know, travel around with you, and people would do that. And you really have had such an interesting story, so much so that there was even a documentary about you a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's that like to have a whole documentary about?
It's pretty weird to see your life's work
mm-hmm.
in, you know, 68 minutes mm-hmm. of film. You know, it was you know, humbling, I guess, but also it was cool to see stuff like that I hadn't thought about in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we kind of grew up in an age where, you know, digital now with cameras and stuff, we didn't have that. So the raw video footage of us is very difficult to find. So it was kind of grainy, and, you know, and it kind of added to the story, though, in a way, too. Because
mm-hmm.
we kind of grew up in a, I don't know, technology just wasn't, you know, we were in tapes still, you know, and stuff. So it was, I think today, I mean, just by sake of technology, you'd have a little easier time getting a lot of footage. I mean, people in the crowd even just, you know, filming too.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any of that. We had a very limited supply of video to go through. So, but it was fun nonetheless to see that played out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, humbling, I would say. I mean, it was something that kind of unexpected. I never would have thought when I started a band that there would be a documentary about the band. That was never the goal
mm-hmm.
to do or have done.
Right.
But it just worked out. I mean, thanks to Mark. Mark put a lot of time into that. I mean, he knew that was something it was a 25-year anniversary kind of celebration. And
mm-hmm.
so he sort of spearheaded that. It wouldn't have got done if he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a passion project from the start. You know, I just knew that it would be something special when it was finished. So,
mm-hmm.
And sort of it was a great opportunity to archive a lot of the old footage, photos that had never been put into any digital format. So now, because of that whole experience, we have all of that stuff archived forever,
mm-hmm.
which is great to know, you know.
And even though you've been in the band only, I'm using quotes, been in the band for 8 years,
yeah.
You were a fan before then, and they yep. played in your dad's bar, did I read something?
Yep, I grew up with the Big Woo mm-hmm. in Northfield. I grew up in Northfield, and the band was playing their first shows at my dad's bar. So I was just there, and I used to hang out at the practice spot and just hang out and watch the band play and you know, I was good friends with Andy Miller and Andy's family, our bass player, and yeah, so Big Woo's always sort of been a part of my life, especially my musical life, because I got my first guitar when I was 11, right about when the band started. Mm-hmm. So it's been an interesting journey, but Big Woo's sort of always been there, you know.
That's really, really cool that you had the opportunity to jump in. And so as with any band, or most bands that have been around for as long as you all have been, there have been some changes along the way. There's still original members, but then, you know, of course, you started in college, so of course people's lives are going to change, and some people are going to leave the band. And so you've really gone through a lot of changes over the years, and had periods where you were more active and then not as active. And so it kind of seems like you're coming back to be a more active period right now. Is that mm-hmm. fair to say? Yeah. So tell me about the new album. And so did you have a lot of material saved up for that? Or was it, you know what, let's do an album, and then you started working on material. How did that work?
There was, yeah, we had some songs. I mean, you know, when you don't record for a while, when you're just playing live shows, and that's what we were doing. We were playing a lot, but that's what we were up to. So any new stuff that we had over those years, we had played, you know, really worked through, played live. So there's a few songs on the record that had never been recorded, but we have played, we'd played live a bunch of times. And those sound great. And then, but we also wrote some newer tunes for the record. So it's kind of a combo of what you were saying. But there's definitely a new a flavor of kind of this new picture of the Big Woo. You can see it, and you can hear it, and it's the few of the tunes are really an great example of where what we're sounding like these days, which is a little bit different. So you get that on the new record, as well as some older stuff.
There's a couple of really rocking songs out there. Yeah. Yeah. You're wailing on the guitar there? I can't remember the name of this
guy. These guys here, Mark and I, are trying to wail.
Occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really, so, you know, some stuff that you would expect, and then some stuff that is a little bit different, so that's kind of nice. So you have been playing all along through this time, and what's your fan base like these days? Like, where do you travel? Where are the people that are excited about seeing? And you used to do a yearly Big Woo family reunion. I don't think that's happened in a few years, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
Oh, it still is? Going, okay. Yeah. Oh, it is. I thought
somehow
that.
Somehow it still happens, even okay. when we're not sure if it's going to happen.
Okay.
It still somehow
okay.
happens. We've done 17 of those things now.
That's great. Wonderful. Well, and that is the thing that I feel like about this band. It's just so beloved, you know, and it is like a family, your audience.
I just wanted to mention, you talked about the documentary, and it was mm-hmm. like, I thought, you know, in some ways, we're not any more deserving of a documentary than so many other bands. It just so happens that it has a lot to do with our fan base, and this documentary was for them. It was for them to, because they were such an integral part of our success, and their support was the reason why we were able to do what we did. And the documentary really reflects back on that time, and it mentions and shows a lot of the people that we wanted to thank. And in the Big Roo family reunion concert that we've done is another way of just reaching back out to those people, you know, wherever they're sprinkled around the country. So we give them a chance to say, hey, I'm going to fly back to Minnesota or wherever we throw the concert, and we're all together again. It is a reunion. It really is that. And when we first started playing it, we thought that was just a cute name, calling it the family reunion, and now that's really what it is. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Well, it's nice to have that. Well, let's hear another tune, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more. What do you want to do next?
This is called How the West Was Won.
Going going on 3 years or more. Would not stop to reach the fence with the ribbon on the door. Hush now, baby, this is how the West was won. There's three bullets in a barrel of a six gun. Nothing to lose, blood on their hands. You trust in God, you find yourself the American. Yeah. You ride on horseback up the road with no rails until you made your bed down. Keep on pushing until you reach Loveland Pass. By the grace of God, will you find yourself something real to last? Yeah. Hush now, baby, this is how the West was won. Yeah. There's three bullets in a barrel of a six gun. With nothing to lose, the blood on their hands. Trust in God, you find yourself.
Big Woo stripped down version live from Studio A, another tune from their new album, which is called We Are Young, We Are Old. What inspired that name?
Well, it's a lyric from one of Chris's songs. It's a chorus. I don't know. It made a lot of sense to me. I don't know. Titles are a bit, you know, you can kind of take them or leave them, but that one kind of resonated with me, just where we've been and where we're going, I guess.
I think it's a collective we, too. I mean, it's not just like, it's like, you know, if you know, we're talking about the people that come see our band, and you know, there's kids, you know, there's people in college, yeah, like here, and they're like, hey, you know, people told me to come see this. This was really great. And then there's also, we all have kids too, yeah, so our kids are running around, and so we're just in the middle of
we're not getting this thing.
That's right, but, Mark. We're not. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's combining a lot of different generations now.
I will share a funny story though. Like, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, I would get a lot where a new person fan would show up at a show and they would say, you know, my older brother used to play your records for me or your shows all the time, and that's why I'm here. And I will say, that's how you know that you've been around as long as Chris and I have, because I swear to you, in the last maybe 2 years, I've gotten people coming up to me at the show that say that their parents used to play our records. Right. And that is, to me, it's like sort of some kind of strange milestone,
mm-hmm,
but it's a generational thing that now it's pretty weird, you know, like when you get someone to come yeah, you know, soon it will be that, but it's just funny. It's just, again, it's things that you're not setting out to do or attain, mm-hmm, when you start, but then when you look back at it, it makes you laugh because it's changed, you know, it's changed. I haven't changed, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's an old yeah, Joe Walsh lyric where he's like, everyone around me is different, but I'm still the same.
Right.
And I feel like people look at me and expect me to be a different person than I was long ago. But I don't feel like it. It feels just like my life,
mm-hmm,
happened. And mm-hmm, that's just the, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. But I just chuckle when they say, you know, my parents used to play your album and I'd just be running around on the carpet and now they're at the show. I mean, that's how you know you're, I guess you're old.
They're like, Mr. Vanderwalker, is it true your band existed before
email? Yeah. Yeah, like what was that? What were the olden days like? Yeah. I've thought of that too as a person in my 50s. You know, when we were growing up, our grandparents saw so many changes in their lives, and I never thought I would see, you know, that. And yeah, now we've gone through it. Yeah. You know, we have gone, yeah, through, right, that massive transformation.
A lot of stuff.
So that was like our horse and buggy was the era before the internet, et cetera.
Absolutely.
So it's that kind of makes me feel old sometimes, but that's okay.
Right. It is. It's fine. It's, yeah, it's just, it's not bad. It's just, it just makes me realize how long we've been at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it surpasses generations, you know, I already, yeah, knew that, but now it's like another generation.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so what you do live is really kind of the heart of the band, the most, you know, vital thing that has kept you going through these years. So what made you decide it was time to do a new album?
Well, it needed to be done, and Mark was in the band now, you know, for a while, and so bands need to make records. They need to play live, but they also need to make records, and we sort of skirted our creative responsibility a little bit by not making records. So,
you went through kind of a difficult time during in the early, yeah, early aughts, I think, with a record company, and
yes,
so that must have kind of
happened. Yeah,
that soured us a little.
Must have left a bad taste in your mouth.
It did.
Yeah.
But even those records we made ourselves, you know, they maybe financed, but we never had anybody with the creative control. So, mm-hmm, we were always in control of when we could and what was on it. It just, I don't know, it just takes a lot of organization to get in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
But once Mark was in the band for 5, 6, 7 years, you're kind of looking at each other in the van going, we should probably have a new record at,
mm-hmm,
this point.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, though, I love the record. I love making records. I love being in the studio. Love this record, and you know, I think it's a great album. I'm thinking about the next two, I guess, yeah, at this point for me. I want to get with him a collection going of records with Mark now.
Nice. Yeah.
And that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So where did you make this one?
Called Bright Spot in Minneapolis with a, okay, engineer named Rob.
Mm-hmm. And you worked with someone that you'd worked with a long time ago, right? Bill?
Yes, Bill Cutler, from San Francisco helped. He produced one of our kind of more polished records that we ever have done, mm-hmm, called Spring Reverb, and he loves the Big Woo, and
he's incredible.
So
it was a real treat to work with.
He's a great producer.
Yeah.
So he helped us on this one. It's kind of, he didn't do every, you know, work on every tune, but I called him a lot actually and sent him tracks to listen to and get his feedback, just because I trust him, his ears and stuff. And he's out in San Francisco. He's related to John Cutler, who was an old sound guy for the Grateful Dead. So there's some, you know, he's got some cred there. And I really, I trust him a lot. When I'm there, I always try to find him and go have coffee with him because he's great to talk to. And he's a real cool guy, like a lot cooler than me, I guess.
And there's another Grateful Dead connection. One of the tunes uses lyrics from Robert Hunter. And you, Terry, I think you were the one that
did
the music in the
head.
That one?
Yeah, it was a real convoluted story. But
and for people who might not know, Robert Hunter was a lyricist for a lot of the Grateful Dead stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, we had a roadie at the time named Joe Torbert, whose Uncle Dave Torbert was in New Riders of the Purple Sage. And so Joe one point asked me if I'd be interested in looking through some lyrics that he got from his uncle, and of course I said yeah, sure. So he gives me this folder and I go through the lyrics and I find this one song called Kick in the Head, and sat down and wrote a song in like, I don't know, 5 minutes. It's not that complicated of a song, only to find out later that it was already written by David Nelson Band. So there's two versions going on. And then at the time we were friends with Joni Greggins, who was the manager of David Nelson, and so I asked her, is this okay to do? And she said, it's fine. He's fine, it's fine. So and then she confided in me that she liked my version better. So I thought, okay, it works. Nice. But yeah, I mean, written with his lyrics, and in the spirit, but David Nelson's version and Big Woo version are diametrically opposite.
Interesting.
But we could play that song for you if you'd like.
You're more than welcome to.
Should we do that?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's hear it.
Kick in the head.
One, two, three, four. You think we could work it on out? Change the whole proposition about. I'm in no position for an act of sedition. I really love the scream and shout. Half a loaf is better than a kick in the knee. You're gonna give me more tea or just sympathy? Got a bumper on the line this time. It's mine, mine, all mine. Ran to the king of creation. I told him to save a bed for me. The way things look, I could have written the book. But you know I can hardly read. Sally, does your dog bite? No, no, no. Put him on a choke chain and reel him out slow. I got a little place I call my own. It never really was a home. You know the white face, Lydian jug. Give a little, one, two, three. Little Jack Horner, sitting down on the corner. Thank you. throw me away. I'd go crazy if I wasn't so lazy. What more can I say? Half a loaf is better than a kick in the head. If you tell me what you mean, I might tell you what I said. I sent you for jelly, you come back with jam. Who exactly do you think I am? The white-faced Lydian jug. Give a little one, two, three. Little
is the Big Woo, Stripped Down Style, live from Studio A, and Kick in the Head, another one from that new album of theirs, We Are Young, We Are Old. And so, Terry, you were saying you're amped to do more albums now.
I am.
Well, and it looks like, do you have a lot of shows coming up around this album? I think the album officially came out in December, is that right?
Yeah, so not too long ago. We played a bunch in December at our kind of our favorite spots, and it's been going well. Mm-hmm. Good turnouts and stuff. I want to pack tonight, though. I mean, Red Herring, not that big, so come on, Duluth. Let's pack this thing out. Let's make Bob Monahan proud, okay?
Let's make him stressed out because there's so many people and so many things he has to take care of.
No, it's good. So I just want to, I mean, I love Duluth. We've been playing here for a long time, and I just want to see a bunch of people there tonight throwing down with us, so should be good.
I suspect you will. Well, thank you so much, everybody. That is Chris Castino, right?
Yes.
And Mark Joseph and Terry Vandewalker of the Big Woo. And again, I mentioned all those places that they're going to be playing. And that is a big weekend Northland Blitz here. Yeah. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Emma Gilhausen, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs.